It's that time again. ESO just dropped their 2024 EMS Index, a must-read benchmarking tool for every EMS agency. With insights from over 12 million EMS responses in 2023, it covers topics like bystander CPR, ambulance offload times, and opioid overdoses. Your free copy is now available at ESO.com/EMS-POD.
Welcome to the GEMS Report, brought to you by Clarion Events, Fire and Rescue Group, and the Journal of Emergency Medical Services. I'm Ted Lee, Editor-in-Chief of GEMS, and along with Jeff Frankel, our Managing Editor, we will be bringing you industry leaders and subject matter experts to discuss the news, hot topics, and all things impacting pre-hospital medicine. Today, we have a special guest with us, Deputy Chief of Operations and Training from Central Berkeley Fire and EMS, Justin Miles Miller. And he'll be talking with us about the topic of arming EMS. Thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule.
Thank you. Absolutely.
So why don't you give our guests a little bit of background about who you are and your department and kind of just an overview before we get into the topic.
Yeah, I'm Justin. I am a operations and training officer, admin chief for Central Berkeley Fire and EMS. We're in the Charleston area of South Carolina, kind of a booming area of Berkeley County, where a lot of the bigger companies have kind of exploded this area. So I got to be a part of that and be a deputy chief here of training and operations for EMS. I got my associates in Charleston at Trident Tech with Dr. Lee, and went on to Missouri Southern and got my bachelor's with Dr. Lee as well. So I spend most of my day kind of just, you know, presenting the policy and the practices of our agency as an EMS, a licensed EMS agency. We are fire-based, so we also carry the fire tactics as well. But most of my job is training our paramedics and EMTs and EMRs, as well as maintaining our policy stance for EMS practice.
And before taking that position, what was your work history?
Yeah, before I took this position, I was a full-time flight paramedic for Medicare Air with Global Medical Response out of Charleston, South Carolina. We're an EC-145 program there, doing ECMO, a lot of interfacility, about 80-20 interfacility scene calls. Prior to that, I was a station supervisor with Dorchester County EMS. I spent a good bit of my growing career at Dorchester County EMS in the Charleston area. Very fond of my time there, and that led me into the flight medicine. All of that time, I kind of came up under you, Dr. Lee, and you reared us, myself and a couple of others that came out of the associates program as educators quite quickly. And so we got to take advantage of your knowledge and your mentorship. And so all along, since about 2011, in addition to my primary responsibilities as a provider, I became a training officer and an educator in the college tech arena, as well as the private regional EMS arena in South Carolina. We have regional EMS offices that also do some training. And so with your guidance and your mentorship, I became an instructor and also took that on throughout my career.
Great. Well, thank you for the kind words. So on the topic of arming EMS, GEMS did an article a few weeks ago on this, and there's been a hot debate following that article, but it's been a topic that has been up for debate for a while in EMS and fire EMS circles on, you know, whether providers should be armed either lethal or non-lethal means. And your department has a policy and does this. So that's why you were invited to kind of talk about this subject. So if you could maybe dig into, you know, what your department does along these lines.
Absolutely. In reading the article and talking with you about this, it was awesome to see the current kind of the media exposure that this is increasing. And so we are a carry department here. We do keep it at the chief level staff only. So our policy is that even though in the state of South Carolina, we are a constitutional open carry state, and it would be at the behest of an employer to decide whether to extend that right into the workspace or not, we have done so. But in addition to that, we've required the concealed weapon permits obligations that we don't actually have as citizens, but our department took those obligations on to further protect us as far as a risk benefit analysis goes. So our policy is that it's chief staff only. Those chief staff officers are present and prevalent on the bigger calls. And so this for us was an additional layer of protection at the command staff level, given the increase of incited violence against responders, especially in the EMS arena, and the delay sometimes of our law enforcement brothers and sisters being able to get on scene and help us out and keep us safe. And so there's a lot of talking points there, but as far as the policy goes here, it's chief staff only, and we are maintaining a CWP program, and so all of those laws apply.
Okay. So what prompted the decision to go in this manner, where, you know, a lot of departments are strictly hands off, for, you know, lack of a better term, you know, they don't want to get into this realm?
Absolutely. I certainly see those departments' perspective. The risk of this is not absent. And so it is a conscious choice of a department, and thereafter a conscious choice to maintain a program that keeps any amount of lethal arming of your staff safe, as far as training is concerned, as far as the law is concerned. So what brought it about for us is a chief of our department and a board that was very supportive of this. We're in a state in South Carolina where the constitutional carry of weapons is very common as far as firearms are concerned. In our state now, it is currently legal for anyone who can legally possess a firearm over the age of 18 to carry that firearm without any kind of training, without any kind of class, without any kind of permit. So we know the weapons are out there, and it is the support of our board and the support of our chief that command staff officers would have gone an extra mile to take on training, to have a policy, and also maintain the carrying of weapons in our department at the chief level for our responders, for ourselves, the community that we serve. So to come together, I think it's the support of our board, the support of our chief, the support of our community. We live in a community where this is practiced and this is a part of their daily lives. And so it wasn't a stretch to bring into the workspace. It was merely making sure that we did so safely, that we did so with sound policy, and that we did have the backing of our board. We also have attorney guidance that comes from our board as well. We have legal scholars on the matter of constitutional carry and on the matter of the use of firearms by firefighters and EMS providers in the workspace. We actually have the advantage of someone on our team that has dived into that a lot in his career. So we're taking advantage of that and using his guidance to form our policy and keep us in the navigational buoys, why deploying this policy that we think keeps us safer.
Yeah. So you mentioned community support for this. Could you touch a little bit on that? I mean, how was the initial reaction? How was it pushed out? You know, mm-hmm. What were the expectations of your local community?
Right. We haven't made a press release to this at all, but this has been going on for some time, and the community sees this going on. And one of the interesting things to me when I first came on with the department is, one, I'd never worked for a department where we were carrying in the workspace at the chief level, supervisors or otherwise. And so it was also new to me. Now, I have a significant background of being very interested in constitutional carry in the Second Amendment, whether that be good or bad, or I love all things related to that. So it was interesting for me to accidentally land on a department that was already exploring this. And so that was pretty cool to me. The community seems to receive this very openly. And I don't know that they see any difference in us than law enforcement. Now, we are very different when it comes to policy, and we are very different when it comes to the law. And so those distinctions are very important to make. But I would say that as we encounter the general public with our chief staff being armed, most of which carry not openly, some of which do, we haven't really seen anyone take note or pay any attention to. I think it's worth mentioning that in our state, the way that a policy is driven for the use of firearms, not as a law enforcement officer, applies to the open laws, the open gun laws of our state. There's no special law or legislation in our state that allows firefighters or EMS providers specifically to carry in the workspace. There have been bills put forward, and those bills kind of died as constitutional carry became a reality in our state. And so there were bills put on South Carolina legislation to attempt getting firefighters specifically or EMS providers specifically recognized, and those bills didn't come to pass because of constitutional carry. But the other laws still apply. One of the examples of that is that if we come into someone's home, unlike law enforcement officers, they have a right to be there with their firearm in open space. We do not by the laws of South Carolina, and so we must ask permission. And so in your talking point of how the community receives us, we ask, we come in the door and we say, our fire department carries openly for your protection and ours. Are we welcome in your home with our firearm? And we've never had anyone say no. So we do make that known to the public that we're serving if we even bring our firearms inside. So we do have a lock policy. So if the call sounds significant, if we feel like we're going to be getting out of our space and getting onto the ambulance to maybe go in with the transport provider in our particular region, we will lock our weapons in our lock boxes in our trucks, all of which have the same locking system in them with a special key that only the person operating the locking box would have access to. And so not only do we have our QRV vehicles, which have a special locking app where you can lock the vehicle while it's running, inside our weapons would be additionally locked in a lockbox. So typically in a private home, we are not encountering the community with an open weapon. But when we do, we've asked permission as per our laws, and we've had no issue. So I feel like it's been received well, and I don't know that they take any obvious thought to us in difference of any other responder that might have a firearm.
Right. Well, that's interesting. So now it might be an obvious question, but, you know, just to throw it out there, and I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, you know, why the chief level? You know, why not a different level? Why was that level chosen to be, okay, this is what we are comfortable with, or this is how we're going to move forward versus any other decision?
Absolutely. That's a really good question. So for us, it's risk versus benefit. And you never have to go all in. You never have to not go all in. And these policies and procedures can certainly be settled in. And so for us, it was keeping this program, if we're going to go forward with this, if we're going to arm any of our staff or any of our department as an official agency, doing that is a big step, and putting in training and putting in policy, that is a big step. And how do we generally behave with firearms in our workspace, given the constant dynamic, the fact that what we do just changes so quickly, and we could be doing something so mundane in 1 second and zero to hero in another. And so how do you address firearms in the workspace when that's the case? So for us, it was just a matter of that. The less of them to manage is a better benefit versus risk. And so it wasn't us saying that we don't believe we'll ever get to that space where there aren't locking devices on our engines and that we're not arming any other providers in our department. That might one day happen. But at this point, it is safer and easier to maintain concealed weapon permits on file, to maintain the training, to maintain the policy for a more confined number of staff at the administrative level than it would be to disperse the policy grossly upon the entire department. So a lot of that is the job difference. You know, we're running QRVs, they're running engines, they're in and out of squads, in the engine, out of the engine. So their dynamic is a little less controlled. And so then the safety component is a little less controlled as well. So that kind of just bore out for us as who's doing what job. Yeah. How can we deploy this policy the safest?
Right. Okay. Well, that makes sense. So, in the research that was done for this, and some of this might have actually been done before your addition to the department, but were there other departments that were looked at who might have had similar policies, or, you know, had already started to research this type of arming of the command staff?
Absolutely. So I'm not going to name any of those departments, obviously, no, but there are other departments in the state of South Carolina that are doing that. And in fact, the legislation that I talked about earlier was actually positioned by one of those departments, by a fire department in the state of South Carolina that partnered with legislators to put forward a bill that would specially recognize firefighters in the workspace as having the authority. I don't want to quote their bill in the small talk of it. Having the authority to also possess weapons, similarly to the legal allowance that law enforcement possesses weapons in the responder workspace. So yes, we do have other departments that are doing this that we obviously went to get information from. And interestingly enough, those departments have actually led the push before we had constitutional carry, before we had open carry with CWP, concealed weapons permits, because South Carolina's progressed quickly. We didn't even have open carry until about 5 years ago. That was coming about for us. And now at the swipe of a pen, we have constitutional carry, open carry without the use of a permit. And so this particular bill and these fire departments that were leading the charge on that had put forth that legislation before we had all this constitutional carry and concealed weapon permit, open carry. So yes, there were other departments that were doing it. The appetite to publicize and grossly say who's doing this or what are they doing in their department is obviously very careful, risk versus benefit, keeping your department safe, even not wanting to super put out that your department is carrying, because again, the carrying of a fire department or an EMS agency in the responder world is not a law enforcement duty. It has only one purpose, and that purpose is that when a lethal force encounter is experienced, that we would be able to meet force with force. And so not a lot of departments have publicized their policies, but we did look at how many we could find doing it. We looked at who was championing that legislation when it came about, and we used the advice of our subject matter expert, one of the attorneys on our team, who did have some closer conversations with those departments, and we kind of modeled what we could after them. But the readily available information on fire departments that are openly carrying, I just don't think that's old enough. I think it's kind of a newer thing. So.
Yeah. Well, as the gun laws have been changing in the United States, to your point, it's been kind of rapidly, you know, of course, it takes time, but it seems like it's almost overnight that suddenly, you know, the laws have changed and now the landscape is quite different. And you mentioned now that, you know, matching lethal force with lethal force. Did you ever consider or did the department ever consider non-lethal measures, other things that might have been able to be utilized in the workspace for providers?
Right. That's a very good question. And for us, we did not. We did not want to get into the arena of elevating levels of force or going through the tactics that you would see in a law enforcement agency. We merely wanted an opportunity to defend life. And that is it. And so when we consider our program here in my department, the program is very limited to what you would be doing as a private citizen carrying a weapon. We are not attempting to form any law enforcement response here. We're not attempting to mitigate any law enforcement encounters. We still keep ourselves clear of scenes that aren't determined safe. We don't behave any differently here now that we have this policy than we did before. So in regard to considering the other options before firearms, for us, that wasn't something we wanted to get into the arena of, because we didn't want us involved in encounters where we're elevating force. We wanted to keep this medicine based. Are we experiencing patients who need medical treatment such as sedation or even intubation secondary to psychiatric episodes or those types of things? That's medicine. And we wanted to keep it medicine. So in our regard, the firearm for the chief level staff is never to be thought of or brought into what we're doing as a duty until someone is attempting to take lethal action against us as the responder. So we wanted to make that very clear to our chief officer staff, and we did so also in policy, that there is no difference in how we're behaving than the concealed weapon permit laws allow a private citizen to behave in the private environment, whereas we would only use a firearm to defend our lives. We would only use a firearm to defend the life of other responders or patients. So that's kind of the headspace that we came from in saying, you know, tasers aren't right for our environment. For us, if other departments choose to try to address this in a different way, I think all those options are good things to think about, because we are elevating force against responders. And so that and how we address that is very diverse. For us, the firearm was only an encounter for lethality, and we want it to be never to occur. And so when you start talking tasers, when you start talking pepper spray, you get more into the frequency of deployment. We don't want any deployment that differentiates us from being a provider to the public as a fire department, being a provider to the public as an EMS agency. The firearm is merely if we were to encounter lethal force against us, and that is it.
Right. So two real quick questions, and actually I just forgot one of them, but
I'm sorry.
One, how
if
is
I'm long-winded, shut me up.
How has law enforcement been on this topic for you guys, working with you guys on this?
Certainly paid attention. I would say they took note of, but again, I would say that we are in an area where the carrying of a firearm by non-law enforcement is super common. I won't say popular. That's probably not a word I would prefer. I wish that none of this was necessary, to be honest with you. But in our environment, we have a lot of citizens who carry openly. And almost as soon as it was allowed, we saw that transition. So I would say that law enforcement took note. We certainly at the chief level spoke to our partners that were in command staff in agencies that are around us and partner with us and serve with us. We certainly did not do this in a silo. We didn't do it quietly. We talk with them. We ask them. I wouldn't say that we looked for blessing, because the law was the blessing. The right. Laws in our state are the blessing, but we certainly didn't want to go forward with anything that brought great rebuke. I don't think we would have done if our sheriff had said, please don't do this, I don't think we would have done this. But again, we're in an environment in South Carolina where good people who have training and are armed a phone call came through. Good people that are trained and armed is considered a very positive in the environment that we serve, in the community that we serve. And so I would say they took note, and we certainly ask. And we certainly had conversations to make sure that we weren't doing something that was so untoward it would draw rebuke. But we have not seen anything negative from law enforcement.
Okay. And I remembered the last question. So it sounds like the policies and procedures are quite in depth, and that they've been researched quite a bit. And just the quick question would be, you know, generally speaking, the overall cost for, you know, are weapons purchased by the department? What type of training, you know, is conducted by the department versus by the individual? Are you seeing that, you know, a substantial outlay of budget comes into this policy and procedure to make sure that it's safe and in accordance with what you guys have laid out?
Super important question. And I think that to a point that you made earlier, a question that you made earlier, is why we also didn't move outside of the command staff with this policy as we employed it initially. And the policy has been about for a couple of years now. And thankfully, no one's even taken note of this, because we have not been in a counter, and I hope that we never are, where this has to be known about or used. But in your point earlier, why did we stick to the command staff? That's another point, is if you go out beyond the command staff, you increase that budgetary demand of increased training. Do you start issuing firearms? So we have not done that. We do not do that. This was, we are a department that already had CWP carriers. All of our command staff, excepting one, was a CWP holder, a concealed weapons permit holder, maintaining our own firearms. And so for us, this policy that we formed was CWP based, concealed weapons permit based. Do you have a concealed weapons permit? If you don't, no participation. If you do, then that permit will go with the policy and it will be your firearm, and you are behaving as a private citizen with a concealed weapons permit who has the permission, the expressed consent of the authority, which is our chief, to maintain that concealed weapon permit and firearm in the workspace. So it's our weapon, it's our concealed weapon permit. We are simply being given express consent from the chief to maintain ourselves in a professional atmosphere with that CWP in compliance with all state and federal laws. Great. So we didn't have to go down the road of a bunch of money from the budget to issue firearms or a ton of additional training. And I think that if you expanded this any further, and that training is always good for everybody. And so not to say that us as command staff, we don't take training, or that we don't use some budget funds to make sure that we are doing the right thing with this. But certainly that demand for budget would increase drastically if we took this beyond the chief level.
Right. Okay. Well, I want to thank you for spending the time with me today and talking a little bit about your department and the process that you've gone through with this. Is there anything else that you would like to kind of wrap up your thoughts, or, you know, a position by your department on the topic of arming EMS and fire personnel?
Yeah, I think I would just say thank you for the opportunity. I think this is a topic that I believe will increase. I think the article that you guys put out was well done and well thought out and looked at. And so we would just say that this isn't a political stance for us, and this isn't something we encourage other departments to necessarily do. It is a personal decision, I think, and we think, by each department to make that decision for yourselves. We're thankful for the opportunity to say that we do this. We're thankful for the opportunity to say that we are addressing the increased threat that comes to responders. We pray we never have to deploy this, but it is our hope that departments do what is necessary to protect their responders. And so for us, this is kind of an internal attempt to do that, and nothing more than that. So we understand that this is daunting. It is a big deal. It's risk versus benefit. And so we are appreciative of the opportunity to say that we do this, and here's why. And it's no more than that. And we pray that this is never necessary, and that one day we could even go completely away from this, and that we would leave that to law enforcement, because we have increased the safety of responders. That would be great.
Yeah, great. Nice message. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Again, if you're interested in coming back and speaking on this topic later on, we'll definitely have an avenue for that, or articles about your department and what you guys are doing. We'd be interested in that, because to your point, there are a lot of departments that either have gone this route or are looking for something similar to this, to see about, you know, what are other departments doing out there to try to mitigate this. So again, thank you for your time, and
thank you.
Very appreciate it, and be safe out there.
You as well. Thank you so much.